Thank you, William.
I'm Jimmy Powers over alcohol.
Thank you.
I'm extremely grateful to be here and grateful to see all of you that are here tonight, because the only way we can improve upon our sobriety is to make meetings like this and listen to the people, accept what we hear, practice it in our lives, and then pass it on to others. That's just a beautiful way of life. Those who haven't seen me in quite a while notice I'm walking with a cane. I lost about 20 pounds. Had nothing to do with the fact that a couple of days ago I turned 69 years old. That had nothing to do with it. It has to do with it as the doctors up to the Veterans Hospital in Atlanta have diagnosed me with colon cancer. And I say they diagnosed me that way, see. So this has been since just before Christmas. They opened my belly up and they said, oh man, we got to shrink that thing. It's too big. And so every day I go up 5 days a week for radiation, and right here, this is a chemo box. Chemotherapy goes through me 24 hours a day. I can't take it off. It's got a longer cord. I can take a shower with it. I take it to bed with me. And you know what? A guy up at the VA hospital said, I'm going to tell you about changing our thinking in this life. You know, if we put down the drink a day at a time, we must change our minds. We must change our thinking. I've often gone to the jails, penitentiaries, and prisons, and one message that I leave in that place is I tell those people, when you leave here, you know, meaning either on parole or parole or your time is up or whatever, when you leave here, if you leave here with the same mind that brought you here, you're going to come back. And if that don't make sense to anybody in this room, my friends, you better get another sponsor, because I'm telling you, if we don't change our thinking, we can't change our lives. So the doctors, I said, diagnosed me. But what's going on is the fact that I've already astounded them. I drive up and back every day myself. And I would have drove out here tonight, except Claude wouldn't let me. But what I'm trying to tell you is that God has already healed me. He just hasn't told the doctors yet. And he'll tell them pretty soon. Then I'll be back on the road to getting fat again. But I learned all this in AA. See, I don't accept the fact there's anything wrong with me inside. I will not accept it. Once I accept it, that means I got it. My God says you have that which you claim. I pray to God remove a stomach disorder. You know what I'm doing? I'm claiming I have it. And I'm eliminating him from the healing process. I just each day claim my good health. Claim my good health. They cannot believe my blood count is great. My blood pressure is perfect. Doctor said we never use that term in medical. But yours is perfect. You see, because I'm claiming my health. I'm not saying, dear God, get rid of this cancer. If I say get rid of this cancer, that means I got it. That means I believe I have it. When I speak tonight, I'm only speaking in respect to myself, my God, my program, and what gives me an exciting day every day. None of you may feel that this is the right way of thinking. None of you may feel that sobriety is not anything more than just not drinking. But for me, sobriety is not drinking a day at a time in absence of inner turmoil. Absence of inner turmoil. In the same mind that creates anger, resentment, pity, guilt, unbelievable, will always create that. And that's the alcoholic mind. That's just the human mind. And someone says, well, Jimmy, it's all I got is one mind. All I got is one mind. All I got is one brain. But you know, like sometimes you see somebody sitting in a big easy chair in front of the boob tube, meaning the television, and they're flicking and flicking and flicking that little button. That's, what are you doing? I'm trying to get something I like on there, you know? But remember this, my friends, in sobriety, to me, which is not drinking a day at a time, in absence of inner turmoil, never once, when them doctors told me, Jimmy, you got cancer, Jimmy, you gotta have chemo. Jimmy, you've got to have radiation every day. Jimmy, somebody's probably gotta bring you up and back. Never once did I get one little tiny butterfly of nervousness or apprehension. Never once. Not because I tried not to, but because spiritual fulfillment and spiritual embodiment doesn't allow it. You walk boldly, boldly in confidence that everything is going to be all right. Wouldn't you love to live a life like that? Never once did I think that a drink might be necessary, a drink of alcohol. Never once did I think that, gee, I'm going to get drunk over this. The thought of a drink doesn't even arise because I'm spiritually filled. Doesn't that big book tell us after we put down a drink a day at a time, we must obtain a psychic change? A psychic change? The psychic change, my friends, is spiritual. Spiritual and nothing else. This is a spiritual program. This is a spiritual life. You can duck it, dodge it, evade it. You know, you can be a tough guy. Don't give me that God stuff, this and that. And you can go back out there and cry your ass off in them damn saloons all you want. Or you can come in here, or you can come in here with the same damn sick and tired mind and be angry, be resentful. I don't want to hear that spiritual crap. You can do that. You can, after 3, 4, 5, 6 months of not drinking, say, man, I wish I could drink like normal people do. What alcoholic wants to drink like normal people? That's why we're here. And if I could drink like normal people, I would be normal people. After a year and a half, this guy was in the program. Now it's coming New Year's Eve, and he wished he could go out drinking on New Year's Eve. You see, he still had the same mind, the same alcoholic mind that will always want to drink, will never be comfortable in these rooms, never. Will always be sitting on your hands on edge and always be thinking about that next drink, that saloon. I didn't want that. I had that for 2 or 3 months when I first come in and didn't understand how some people can be content without a drink. And then I began to listen close, and they read it at just about every meeting, just 1-3 words, spiritual progress, spiritual progress, spiritual progress. That's all we have to do. Running 10 miles a day might make you feel healthier, might be good for your health, you're not going to keep you sober. Chopping wood every day might keep the house warm in the winter. It's not going to get you sober. The only thing this program asks of us after we put down a drink a day at a time is to grow spiritually. That's all. If this is the first time you heard it, my friends, you better not be the last. You better get into it somehow. Somehow find out what it is, what it means, and get at it. You'll be the same person. I always say that the same mind that created my problems in life was never smart enough to solve them. It creates, means a new and different mind, a spiritual mind. I was in a great big city once, and I went to this museum, and this curator of the museum says, Jimmy, come on with me into this little room. I want to show you something. One of the rooms a little smaller than this one. And against the wall all the way around was looked like little fish tanks. But inside, there were there was a human brain. There was a brain in each one of these tanks. And I went over and I saw this one brain and said, holy Christ, $4,500 for this brain. I says, hey, curator, how come they want $4,500 for this brain? He says, well, that was the brain of a great philosopher. He says, that's $4,500. You buy that brain, they can transplant it, and you can be a philosopher. So, wow, I go to this next tank, there's a brain in there, $7,500. I says, what the hell is this, $7,500? Well, the guy's a bilingualist. He can speak any language in the world, and he can negotiate for peace or whatever with any country. $7,500 for that brain. And I go to this next one, this tank, there's a brain in there, $12,500. I says, oh, man. Hey, how come $12,500 for this brain? And he says, oh, that's the brain of an alcoholic. It's never been used. But we know it's been used. It's just been used adverse to common sense. You know, there's a part of this program that says, return us to sanity. When I first came in, they mean I'm insane. You know, that alcoholic ego. Who are they talking about? I'm insane. Well, it doesn't say you're insane. It says return us to sanity. I also say sometimes, you know, just say, for example, you're around these rooms for a little while and you get a little taste of sobriety and you know how good it is in your life. And all of a sudden you decide you're going to go take a drink. Well, that is an unsane thought, my friends. And to come in here and listen and hear these words that can enrich your life, that can make you feel dynamic and exciting, and keep your mind further and further from a thought of a drink of alcohol, and to reject that and go back out into negativity, anger, resentment, pity, and guilt. Isn't that insane? Isn't that insane? You know, in here, you know, here's what I'm talking about with the mind, because this is so essential to sobriety. If I had right now a cup of dirty dishwater, and everybody in this room knew it was a cup of dirty dishwater, and everyone in this room knew that I knew it was a cup of dirty dishwater, and I started drinking as I was talking, that's a sick sucker up there, man. He's drinking dirty dishwater. And you know what? Before the meeting's over, he's going to have a sour stomach. But think of the stinking, rotten, low life filth we put in our minds. The most precious thing we've got. Sit in front of the boob tube and watch that. One guy swinging from a chandelier with a machine gun and all this sex crap and everything. And you see what I'm saying? Put that nonsense into our minds. Yeah, I know a guy that takes better care of his automobile, polishes it and shines it and everything, but nothing but filth comes out of his mouth. Where are our values? That's what's important. Once we put down a drink a day at a time, we must get some value in our life and some principle. And without that, we're the same person, but just the same person without a drink. An alcoholic without a drink is still an alcoholic, my friend. And he'll always think like an alcoholic, unless he changes spiritually. So this is, in a sense, part of the message this evening, like me, not accepting the fact that I've got this. And I'm doing fine. I'm driving all over. I'm not trying to press it, and I'm not trying to be John Wayne or a tough guy. I'm watching my limits because I don't want to, but I'm getting away with it all, man. I'm doing everything. And that's because I'm believing. My God says, listen to this. More people pray for more things, either themselves or for somebody else. And you can see them. Someone's in the hospital, and they pray. And then they go out in the waiting room in tears and they cry. I don't mean to sound cruel, and cold, but let me tell you something. When you pray and worry, worry cancels out your prayer. Did you know that? Prayer is a central part of this program. Won't we say the Our Father after every meeting? If we don't believe what we're saying, why do we say it? Why do we say it if we don't believe in it? The Our Father gives us everything we want in life. Give us this day our daily bread. Daily bread means all we want to live for. Everything we need in the course of a day. We're asking God to give it to them, give us this. And He told us how to pray. He told us to ask Him. But when you worry, it's as if you never prayed at all. Did you know that? Because you know what worry means after you pray? It means you don't believe God can do it, or you don't have faith that He will do it. Did you know that? Well, now you do. Now you know it. So quit worrying. Just pray. This is gone. I zapped it. God zapped it. It's gone. And the doctors tell me there's nothing there. I said, I told you guys. You know what I mean? I told you. This is interesting, though, isn't it? A little bit, something a little different you hear about sobriety. You know why it is? Because this is sobriety. This is sobriety. The other's just not drinking. I mean, I know what it's like. I was there. I remember back in 1957 from a solitary confinement cell in an upstate penitentiary in New York. I had a dream. I had a dream that by the time I left this world, I would be a wealthy man. I don't know the contents of that dream, but I also know that neither alcohol or the pursuit of alcohol, I didn't realize it, had given me that penitentiary dilemma. I didn't realize alcohol was my problem. But in the year 1964, I was worth $52,500, dead or alive. Yeah. And I didn't realize then that alcohol and or the pursuit of alcohol had put that bounty on my head. I didn't know that. In 1967, where were you in 67? I told you I'm 69. In 1967, while in the early years of a 40-year prison sentence in Attica State Penitentiary, at a state prison, my friends, while working on an outdated punch press machine in the machine shop, earning 6 cents a day, and never realized that it was alcohol or the pursuit of alcohol that had put me in such a high wage bracket. I never realized it. 6 cents a day, 30 cents a week to do anything I wanted with. Wow! What a comeuppance, as we used to call it. You get your comeuppance sooner or later. They get you, man. But I'll tell you something. Somebody said to me, well, I changed in prison. Now, I had a problem. You know what my problem was? I could do time. I mean, I didn't do hard time. I could do time. I didn't want to be there, but as long as I was there, you know, I'd just lay back with my cigars and just do my time. But, so it wasn't a 40-foot wall. It wasn't the slamming of the heavy cell door. That's why they call it the slammers. It wasn't the concrete floor, the iron walls. It wasn't the one button, one push button, hot, cold water. There was no hot water. It was like a one-room flat. That didn't change me. It's one day I realized, what am I doing to myself? I owe myself a better life than this. And I didn't realize it was the pursuit of alcohol that led me up to this. Because you see, when I was in high school in New York, as a high school kid, I won the Golden Gloves up in New York State. I won the light heavyweight title, and I was a good little fighter. I didn't want to go to school, and I says, wow, this is my way out. I didn't want to work either. Wow, work was an awful word. And so I started boxing. I started boxing amateur, and I was headlining all the shows up there, all the amateur shows. And I boxed the guy that won the heavyweight, and I beat him, and I was kept pretty good and getting a lot of publicity. And then I started drinking. And when I started drinking, I didn't realize what it did to me. See, that's why I believe so strong the alcoholism in our system. I didn't ever really care to drink. I didn't care to be with the boys and guzzle beer. I didn't need no macho image. I didn't want to drink. But I didn't drink till I was about 19 years old. And then I started drinking, and I couldn't stop. And I was spending more time in the saloons than I was in the gymnasium, and I wasn't getting up for road work. Then I started losing to people that I knew I could beat because I wasn't in condition. And then I got out of the gym and the motor started backing off and I got involved with underworld figures, and I'm talking about organized crime. And that's where it started. And like I say, in 1964, I'll just tell you where this type of life led me. I already had one felony, safe-cracking conviction. And that's when you take money out of a safe that don't belong to you. And it upset the state police because it was right across the highway from their barracks. Oh, man, that bothered them. Well, I says, boy, you took 2 hour coffee break. We were across the street. We worked nights, you know. They didn't realize that. I had a night job. Well, I got 5 years probation, but then I got a year, I got in Rochester, New York. That's outside of Syracuse. Syracuse was my hometown. Rochester, I got charged with trying to relieve a jewelry store of its valuables. And I got a year in the pen. And they nullified my probation, so I'd come out ahead. At least I thought I did. But when I come out of there, the pen, let me tell you, the messages we get that we don't realize until we maybe come in the program and start looking back. Coming back from Rochester to Syracuse, I had done 8 months on a year, and I was thirsty, and I thought it would take, what did you think would it take? 6-8 bottles, a case of beer to get drunk or get high, because I hadn't had a drink in almost a year. But one bottle was only about that far gone, and I was had the familiar buzz on. You see, it was going on inside my system. It never stops. Like after next month will be 27 years without a drink. But if I take one drink, I'm right back where I left off. Did you know that? It continues inside you. There's no going back. And right now, I don't want to anyway. I don't want to anyway. So anyway, now I'm involved in something else. 1964, I was indicted in Buffalo, New York. 9 counts of forgery, and the state's attorney says that, well, this guy isn't writing checks or passing them, but he's heading a statewide forgery ring that's netting quite a few $1,000 a year, month. And I made bail, and I got indicted in Onondaga County on 54 counts of forgery. And I made bail, went back in the saloons, got indicted in 1964 on accessory to robbery in the first degree. And I made bail, and I got back in the saloons, and I got indicted in 1964 on robbery in the first degree. And now the district attorney was saying, you know, this guy's been to the well too many times, and the bonding company thought I was becoming a risk. And so the bond was intolerable, and they lodged me in the new public safety building. And in the summer of 1964, I got indicted on by the U.S., the federal government, in collusion with the Utica organized crime on a $350,000 postal money order swindle. And so anyway, they didn't consider any bail. And I went to trial on the robbery in the first degree, and as a second offender, the maximum was 60 years and with all these other indictments, you know. But I told my lawyer, ain't got nothing on me, you know. And the jury thought different, you know. And that was a funny thing, when the jury comes back, you know, I have to go through this, because I knew this before the OJ trials, you know. Why, when the jury comes back, the women will dab their eyes with a handkerchief. The men will look everywhere but at you, and your lawyer leans over and he says, we're dead. I thought of 60 years, and I leaned back and I said, who's we, Frank? Women always dab their eyes when they find you guilty. Gee. Anyway, the lineup is I go up for sentence and finally end. And but in the meantime, I was a good guy in the county jail. What I mean is I wasn't scheming or plotting, and I was helping people out. You know, see this guy get some cigarettes, see this guy, I wrote letters to people. I'm a high school dropout, but I could write a letter to their home or to their lawyer and help. And I was doing a lot of nice little things to them. You see, I changed my thinking and didn't really realize I did. And so when I went up for sentencing, and I knew I was going to get every day the 60, and the judge looked down at me and he only gave me 40 years, wow, did I feel good. Wow. Changing my thinking, I'd already beat him out of 20 years. But you can't say beat him out of it. A guy would take offense. That's just the way the spiritual laws work. You have to believe that. Now, Claude wants me to illustrate one of my most famous illustrations that I have. I'm not a magician. I'm not they call them psychics. But I'm spiritually sound. Now, let me tell you something. Watch this handkerchief. Huh. Watch, I'll do it again. Every time I drop the handkerchief, it goes down. The law of gravity. Everyone knows about it. Everyone. Nobody thinks that handkerchief ain't going to go down. If it did, Jimmy is a magician or something. Oprah Winfrey or something. Get him on the show. But watch, I'll do it again. Now, I don't advise anyone to try this at home, you know, by yourself. Be responsible for anything like that. But here we go once more. Watch this once. I couldn't even close my eyes. Did you know gravity is a spiritual cosmic law that can't be overcome? It cannot be? Well, listen, here's another one in sobriety. Listen to this one. Like begets like. It's a spiritual cosmic law, just as powerful as that. It cannot be diluted, cannot be reduced, cannot be taken away. Like begets like. What the hell are you talking about, Jimmy? I'm talking about the harvest must be of the seed in everything in life. A farmer plants corn, he cannot grow cotton. Can he? From the seed of corn, he must grow corn. A farmer plants potatoes, he can't grow cauliflower. It must be potatoes. The harvest must be of the seed. Now listen to this one. Take this home to bed with you, children, because this can help change your lives. A negative response to a negative situation will not bring you a positive result. The harvest must be of the seed. Negative to negative must bring you negative. Did you know that? You know that now, too. Wow. We're already changing our lives by changing our thinking. If I had a gash on my arm, now they gashed me here, and let me tell you something. If I had something contaminated, dirty and filthy, instead of rubbing it in the wound, they would say, Jimmy, that's going to make it worse. It's going to infect it. It's going to make it worse. But you know what? I say, well, that's my treatment of that situation. In other words, I'm treating it negatively. And what are you telling me? It's going to make it worse. The harvest must be of the seed. So if I have a negative situation in my life, and I start treating it with negative thoughts of anger, resentment, and whatever, that's my mental treatment of that situation. Did you know that? I'm treating it negatively. I'm pushing a negative into a negative, expecting a positive. It ain't going to work. If that works, then this handkerchief could stay up every other time. A farmer could plant cotton and grow potatoes. There'd be nothing wrong with it. The whole world would be in chaos. So now we're understanding a little bit about this spirituality and how to change our lives simply by changing our thinking. I got up in Attica. That's where they had the infamous riot. If you remember, they made many movies on it and documentaries, and guards and inmates got killed. I locked next door to Jerry Rosenberg. And in prison we call him like it is, Jerry the Jew. But Jerry didn't mind. Jerry was the only inmate in state prison to earn a law degree while he was in prison. And he was allowed to handle appeals from other inmates. And he was very successful in courts. And unbelievable. They made a movie on Jerry. And Tony Danza played the part, if you remember that. Jerry and I, we were next... But what I'm trying to say is, this is in 1967 when him and I were together in Attica State Prison. 1967. Think of how long ago that was. This is 2001. Wow, where did it all go? I was born in 32. I'm feeling old. 1967. I was with Jerry in state prison. I've been out since 1973. I changed my thinking. Jerry is still in prison. Do you know why? He didn't change his thinking. He had a conviction in a Brooklyn stick-up. Two detectives got killed and he got convicted of that murder. He was sentenced to a chair and he got a commute to life in prison, two life in prisons. But he's fighting the system all the way with legal action and this and that. He's fighting the wardens, he's fighting everybody. You know, he's going against the tide. I was never an administration man. I was just myself. But the thing is I changed my thinking. Here's the way Jerry still thinks. It was quite a few years ago, 15 or so years ago, Jerry was in Auburn prison. And he had needed open heart surgery, and they rushed him to Syracuse St. Joseph's General Hospital. They have excellent heart surgeons. And they opened Jerry up bypass or what. I don't know if they had that then. But they lost him. You know how. Wow. And the beeper stopped. When that beeper stopped, you're gone. But anyway, then they start pumping whatever they do, and they brought him back. And he went back to Auburn prison. One of his latest motions, and this was in Newsweek, it was in the New York Daily News, all over the world, is that he's made a motion that he should be released, that he served his time. They gave him natural life. And he says he died on the table, and they brought him back, so he figures he should be released. Change thou thinking. We must change our minds. You see, our mind is like a rudder on a ship. If you want to turn this way or that way, you turn the rudder. This mind directs us to everything. In trouble, out of trouble.
upstairs, downstairs. Everyone here tonight is here as a result of their own thinking. Everyone here is brought here as a result of your own thinking. Somebody else might have drove you. Well, sure, some of the sponsor had to put a gun to him and bring him here, but other than that, you know, we do everything as a result of our own thinking. We are responsible for every act we have in life. And once we start to realize that, always remember, like begets like. If you want to get out of the messes you're in, the same mind ain't going to get you out. You need a new and different in the spiritual mind. I used to change my... See, when I got into messes, I knew my mind couldn't get me out, so I hired a lawyer. Well, the last time I went away, I gave a lawyer thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, and I got 40 years. But I turned to God and I got out. I was supposed to do 13 years and 9 months to even see the proof. But I turned to God and I got out. I was supposed to do 13 years and 9 months to even see the parole board. But a miracle happened. They called me up after the riots, and 8 years and 4 months, I got released. And when I stepped out of it, it's miracle number one. Changing my thinking. Just changing my thinking. Nothing else. No legal work, no lawyer, no nothing. Listen to this. Now I go outside the prison. I'm waiting for the state. They got three indictments on me. The feds still got one indictment on me. I figured one's going to get me, or both. Neither one was there. Since 1973, them indictments evaporated. That's how God works in your life. When you change your thinking and you're sincere, so I'm free, free of all the old indictments. I drank for a year because I didn't know I was alcoholic, and then God led me to this program because he knew I was still sincere. And I came into AA, and I was in AA over a year, and I got called up by parole. Listen to this. I owed 31 years and change when I got out, New York State parole. They called me and says, Jimmy, give us 5 good years. It ain't mandatory, but give us 5 good years and you can be released. On recommendation. I never tried to live the type of life that would get me off parole. All I did was continue to practice the AA way of life. They called me up and says, that's it, kid, you're gone. Free. Free. No more parole. Wow. But I was sincere. I stayed right in this AA program. I've been here for 27 years. And let me tell you something. I always said this when I go back into the prisons. You know, I was a tough guy. And I sit there and I know the guys who sit there think they're too tough or too smart or too much for the AA program. Like maybe there's one or two in this room right now, you know. But that's your problem, not mine. But I'll tell you something. I tell them, you keep that same friggin' mind. You keep it that way. And you just keep coming here. But here's the thing. When sooner or later, your wife or your girl, the one you love, moves on to somebody else, don't blame her or that sucker. Blame yourself and your own stinking, rotten mind. But I know alcoholism is a disease. And I know in here there's a lot of drugs involved, too. I only talk about alcoholism, that's how I got involved in it. You can use this 12-step program in the sense to relieve yourself of the habit of drugs and alcohol. But the only tough guys in this life are the guys that do something about their own life, not just fall in with the crowd, just fall in step with the crowd. I was out in that big yard up in Attica in Auburn. I stood in there in the riot in Auburn, the one that preceded Attica. I stood out there. I got hit with tear gas. I was a leader in that joint. I was a tough guy, but I was changing. And a lot of guys changed with me, and they're grateful for it. And guys like Jerry that didn't are still in there. That's your business. It's your life. This is your life right here. I've often said, two people get married, they stand in front of a minister or a priest or whatever, and you know, there's a real young couple, not always, but a lot of times, you know, these guys attracted to that broad. Oh, man, she's a knockout. She's really built and this and that, and I'm going to marry her. And she thinks, well, he's so cute. And all the other girls from a distance, you know, they all just fall in love with him because he's so cute, see. But they don't realize, you know, they're not realizing that what's really being married is two minds. Look at that beautiful, poor girl, that Milla Monroe, that anyone would have wanted to be seen married to. But how many husbands left her? They left her because of her poor, simple mind.
You see, no matter what the attraction is, physical, sooner or later, mentally, they're going to drive you away from them. So our minds are so important. Our minds are what our life is. It's nothing else. It's what I think. My attitude toward this is what's getting me out of it. My good attitude, my powerful, positive, healthy attitude, my sober attitude. I couldn't think this way drunk. I couldn't think this way drunk. I wouldn't want to think this way drunk. So this is what's important. In the beginning, remember, what the mind doesn't understand, it rejects. You're going to say, oh, this spiritual goof. Why don't you shut up? Why don't you get out of there, you know? Why don't you say to Our Father and go home? Yeah. I know there's at least one of them thinking that. That's all right. I don't care. But I'll tell you something. I'm here for you. I went to prison. I tell them this. Look, I found a way out and a way to stay out. I heard the big mouths. The freaking joint, this is lousy, the food's lousy, the warden's a creep, and this and that and everything. They get out, right? And all they do is screw around in the bars or the street corners or this and that till they come back and they start complaining again. I'd go in there and I'd say, hey, look, you guys, I found a way out and a way to stay out. I'm going to pass it on to you. Accept it, reject it, do what you want with it. But at least I feel obligated to pass it on to you. Because I had a few complaints when I was in here, too. This is what you do about complaints. You remedy them and you pass on the remedy to others. And it's the same way with a rehab. You know, one of the great philosophies of rehab that they don't know, but I do, is we're in here to save ourselves from ourselves. Did you know that? Does that make you feel tough? Save ourselves from ourselves, as well as all those around us. Come on, let's get with it. Let's get sober. Let's get spiritual. Let's start living this life and be all that we're supposed to be, all that we can be. Did you know that sobriety is more than just not drinking and maybe just not feeling bad? Did you know that this AA program is a program of increase, of abundance? Did you know that? You become abundantly filled in this life. The increase is intolerably unexplainable. Just like when they said, Jimmy, we got cancer in your core. Never one little butterfly, never one little ounce of apprehension. Spiritual embodiment and spiritual fulfillment. It's so powerful. I can still tell time. But this is what happens once we start to engender into the spiritual aspect of Alcoholics Anonymous. Gee, I came in AA and I didn't know what was going on. And I saw, well, most meeting halls, they had them, what I thought was them silly little signs, you know, live and let live. Let go and let God. Easy does it, but do it. No, easy does it. So this guy stands up, old timer. Yeah, that's right, Sonny. He says, Sonny, I came in when I was 42. He says, that's right, son. He says, easy does it, but do it. And I says, I had a motto in that old life. And he says, what's that? I said, take it easy, but take it. He said, Jesus, look what it got you, 40 years in prison. So I says, yeah, I got to change that one. So I changed that and I changed them all. I changed my way of thinking. See, what I was saying before the meeting, what we used to think was Bible in the bar rooms, that was Bible talk. This guy's a creep, this guy don't know nothing, that bartender shortchanged me, I'm going to hit him with a beer bottle. You know, that's all Bible. Today, it's nonsense. It's ridiculous. It's unbelievable that I used to think that way. But I didn't. But I don't know more. I'm afraid of God, I never will again. So it's always so important. One thing you'll learn in spirituality and spiritual growth is that we don't have to go outside ourselves for anything that we're really looking for. All the wonders we seek in life are already inside us. God does it complete. When I was created, all the wonders I see, the wonders of inner joy, inner peace, good feelings, they're already in there. But I didn't know it, see? I had crammed all this negative crap on top of it. It's already in there. A woman said to me after a meeting once, she says, oh, Jimmy, I wish I had your peace of mind. I says, you wish you had my peace of mind? I says, why do you say that? And she says, well, you're always so calm and peaceful and whatever.
And she says, I'd like to have that. I says, are you calm and peaceful right now? She says, yeah. And I says, well, you've got it. I said, the difference is that in traumatic situation, you surrender yours to take on a negative attitude or a frightening attitude, and I don't. I retain mine. Oh. I said, you pray to God for this. And you know what God says? Why do you pray to me for that which I've already given you? You already have inner joy. You already have inner peace. You already have a placid mind. You already have it. Just keep using it. Don't give it up for that negative crap. Anger. Resentment. I said, my anger. I said, well, you say my anger is how long you're going to have it. I said, the doctors diagnosed me. I didn't say I had it. Huh? See the difference? As long as you say, my anger, my resentment against that sucker, when you claim it, you got it, and you rule God out, so don't look for any help. Just act on it. Get yourself 30 days, whatever. It's the way it works. We don't have to be that way anymore. Everything we want inside us, everything we want is already inside us. You know, sobriety's in there. I don't have to reach way out in the clouds. They used to say, you know, people look, search for happiness. They used to have, when I was young, we had TV, we had the radio. And one of the soap operas was The Search for Happiness. You know? And every day, Matilda or whomever was out there searching for happiness. Like it was floating around in a cloud, you know, trying to get happiness. And I always said, you know, if that was the way it was, all us tall guys would corner the market on happiness. Where's Fast Eddie? He wouldn't have any. Eddie wouldn't have any happiness. He says he hates basketball players. It's already in here. Only when it's spiritual, it's not happy. See, happy to the human mind is like a new and different car. Wow, I got this nice new car, a different car, better model, whatever, you know. Then somebody keys it, scratches it, or somebody dents your fender, or you got to pay the insurance, you know. The mood ends. Son of a bitch, you know, it's costing me all kind of money to keep this car running. See, that's happiness to the human mind. Happiness to the human mind is out on the golf course with the boss and his friends, you know, and you want to show them. And all of a sudden, bingo, your shot goes out in the woods or something. You end up throwing the golf club up in the tree. You see, happiness to the human mind is limited. Then the mood set in. Oh, happiness is a new friend. Doesn't have to be a lover, but just, you know, a real good friend. And you guys are getting along great. And all of a sudden, they start not acting the way you really want them to act. So then, once again, the moods and the attitudes send in. See, that's happiness to the human mind. The only way to get joy, which is permanent, which is definite, which can't be overcome, which can't be diluted, which can't be taken away. Inner joy comes from spiritual growth. That's the only way. It can't be taken away. Inside me right now, I have so much inner joy and inner peace at this very moment that I can't explain it. It's like an athlete getting in tremendous good condition. He cannot explain that to someone who hasn't been there. He can make you feel like you might know, but you have to be there to understand it. And to have spiritual embodiment and spiritual fulfillment and inner joy and inner peace is such a powerful, dynamic feeling. And yet it's inside each and every one of us in this room right now. I don't have one bit more than anybody else. The only thing is I realize I have it and I practice it. I don't stuff it down with anger and resentment and pity and guilt and adverse thinking. Frig that spiritual guy up there. He's driving me crazy. Well, I used to think a lot like that, but I'll tell you, sobriety to me has been just about the most dynamic thing in my life because it includes everything I need, including my God, my inner joy, my inner peace, the ability to come out here and stand before you and pass on what's helping me, what's making me grow spiritually, and it's just really powerful. It's really powerful. I'm going to maybe 1 minute over. I was in Auburn prison and I started to, not to intellectualize myself, but I was a high school dropout. And you know, you can read a lot of nonsense in prison. How would you like to go, say, do 4, 6, 8, 10 years, and just say in prison, and go back out just as friggin' dumb as you went in?
Well, do you know 98% of them do that? Play cards all day or do something else? And I began to realize that. I started waking up to it myself a little. And I said, you know, I started reading good books. Books about people. I want to read about people who made a success in life. Not necessarily presidents of corporations or something, but they were included. I read politicians, I read about good salesmen, and this. They all talked about a certain spiritual element in their lives that helped propel them to their greatness. And I began to, that's when I began to wonder about spirituality. I started to change my life and whatever. But I'll tell you something. I read this book called The Agony and the Ecstasy. They made a movie on it now. I forget his name that played the part of Michelangelo. Everybody looks at him, you know, as a great painter, Sistine Chapel, and did The Last Judgment, and it's just incredible, this man. The genius is incredible. But his greatest love was sculpting, was carving in marble. He loved it. He loved it so much that once he said marble was his mistress. And that's how much he loved it. And, of course, in them days, he had to be commissioned by the Pope. See, the Pope had him under like his tutelage, and he commissioned him to do this, and then he did a lot of work in bronze, and he says to the Pope, I want to do marble. And, but anyway, commissioned him to do the Statue of David. And they found this big, huge piece of marble. David's, I think, is 8 foot tall. And it's a gorgeous piece of marble, but it had one flaw in it. And Michelangelo said, that's all right, I know how I can work around it, and whatever. And he did the Statue of David. And David remembers that he killed the giant with the slingshot. And David is standing like this. And when you see the statue, David has got the slingshot. And on this side where he's leaning, in the real statue, you can see the tenseness in muscle, the tenseness in his body, because he's putting his weight on this side. And on this side, in marble, you can see relaxation. You can see relaxation like it was a human being. And they say that's what made him such a great genius. You can see tension in marble and you can see relaxation in marble. Unbelievable. How did this guy do it, see? So when they unveiled it and all the centurions there, the Romans and the Pope and all them people, and they all stood back in awe. And someone said to Michelangelo, how did you carve such a beautiful piece of work out of that marble? And he says, I didn't. And they said, you didn't? And he says, no. He says, well, we saw you. Some of us watched you, and we know the Pope commissioned you. We know you did it. He says, no, that ain't what I mean. He says, what I mean is that in that piece of marble, that statue was always in there. All I did was chip away and chip away and chip away till I got to it. And I polished it and refined it. And there's that beautiful piece of wood. In our sobriety, don't fight against anger, resentment, pity, guilty, because then you say in yourself you believe in it. Just grow in to the new, beautiful, spiritual. Just grow into it. How do you do this, Jimmy? How do you understand? I understand it this way, that nobody in this room, nobody, can feel angry unless first they think angry. Every emotion is a direct result of a thought. Nobody in this room can feel sorrowful unless first they think sorrowful. Every emotion is a direct result of a thought. Nobody in this room can feel resentful unless first they think resentful. And you have the power over your own thoughts. Nobody in this room, listen to this, nobody in this room can think cheerful unless first they think can feel cheerful unless first they think cheerful. So all I'm telling you now is to just chip away at them negatives. Chip away, chip away, and chip away till you reach that beautiful, sound, peaceful, powerful, joyous person that's already within you. Think.
Jim Allen, thank you. I thank the Cedar Town Group. Thank you, too. And